Welcome to the Rand Thomas Podcast. In today's podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by journalist, writer, and beauty expert, Sally Hughes. Sally is The Guardian's resident beauty columnist and one of the most respected voices in the industry. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Rand Thomas Podcast. Sally, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
So myself and so many people listening will have a makeup bag that is very much curated by the guidance that we get in your beauty column for The Guardian. So what's life like? From the outside, I'd be very curious as to what life is like as a beauty columnist. What's a day in your life like, if there could be such a thing?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, in normal times, obviously, that's pretty different from how it is now. So I guess pre-COVID would be more of a guide, seeing as I've been doing this job for 10 years. So every new beauty product that comes out pretty much is sent to me, which is really important because it means that there's a totally level playing field. Everyone's in the same boat. All they can do is send me the product. And then I take it from there. So I get many, many, many parcels sent to my house, which I realize is lots of people's absolute beauty fantasy. But then the hard work starts. Things pile up and pile up on testing piles. If I have a column idea running around my head at that time and products come in related to that, it's a sign that I'm kind of onto a good thing, that my instinct is right. And so they will be cordoned off into an immediate testing pile. And so I'm testing products all the time. I very often fall in love with things that I then have to abandon because the pile is becoming a bit uncontrollable. Because I'm just testing things all year round. As soon as a perfume comes in, it's out of the wrapper and on my skin. The same with foundation and lipsticks. And, you know, I have an awful lot of product to get through. And then writing. So that takes throughout the week. And then writing, I would typically write my column in a couple of hours, probably. And then I send it off to the magazine and they find the stockists and get the pictures in. And then in between that, I obviously attend, in normal times, lots and lots of product launches. At the moment, they're on Zoom, but very often they're in person. I try to go to as few of them as I can because I don't really like hearing the same presentation as everybody else. I would prefer a one-on-one, so I tend to try and do that a bit more. But nonetheless, I do have to attend lots of launches. It's just generally keeping abreast of what's happening in the industry, reading lots of trade magazines and trade newsletters, meeting with brand founders a lot to find out what they're working on in the future. And the biggest and most important part of my job, I think, is going on the road and meeting real women. And that includes Ireland. I've done so many events at Rand Thomas over the years. So many. I love meeting real women because very often that's the most insight you'll get about the problems that are annoying people, the kind of skincare gripes, makeup gripes that people want to fix, the products that they're loving, the products they're not loving. I find that absolutely imperative to the whole process. And so I always make sure I'm on the road a lot.
That's amazing. Well, if we didn't think it was a dream job before that explanation, now it definitely sounds like one, but busy too. So with that volume of products, how do you test and trial them? Do you have a criteria checklist when you're rating and reviewing them? What's the process like?
So it depends on the product. Makeup you can test extremely quickly. I know how I feel about a makeup product, you know, on day one. Fragrance is the same. I can test that in a day. That's no problem at all. Skincare takes longer, which is why you would typically not see from me multiple columns on, say, a retinol or multiple columns on something that takes a while to bed in and work, because you can't do that honestly every week. And so typically from my columns, you would see, I don't know, in every four, you would probably see two makeup, one skincare and one other, like hair or fragrance. Because if you were to do skincare every week, you just wouldn't be able to go through the proper testing process. Yeah. So in terms of how the testing process works, if it is So every product that comes through the door does not get tested, but every product that appears in the column gets tested. So what I will have in my head is some ideas for columns. So I might think, I'm going to do a column on rosacea. I'm going to do a column on hyaluronic acid, for example. Mm-hmm. So that everything comes in that relates to those columns goes off into a corner. And then I would typically call around brands and get a whole lot more sent in relating to that theme. And then every single one of those would get tested. So it's what's going around in my head at that moment. And if something comes in and fits with the theme, then it gets tested. Or sometimes so many things come in that are connected to a theme that that gives me an idea for a column. Mm-hmm. That happens quite a lot. I can sense a trend coming down the line. And so I think, okay, that feels like a column.
It's fascinating. And do you find you have to be protective of your skin then? Because if you're trialing, say, hyaluronic acid, you know, does your skin ever have time to adjust and get used to products? Are there ones that you that are always on your bathroom shelf and they're the kind of support and security for your skin almost?
That's a good question. I mean, what I would say is I don't think that you could do this job if you had sensitive skin, or rosacea. So I don't have sensitive skin. I have dry skin and dehydrated skin, but it's definitely not sensitive, really. There's not much that aggravates it, which means I can throw quite a lot at it, which is important. But in terms of my mainstays, I will always, always have a vitamin C serum that I use in the morning. That will always contain hyaluronic acid. I think what people need to remember about hyaluronic acid is that it's in any time, any place, anywhere ingredient. You can use as much of it as you like, as often as you like. It will never do your skin any harm. But obviously, that active ingredients like vitamin C, retinol, alpha hydroxy acids, beta hydroxy acids, you do need to be a bit more thoughtful about how often you're using them and where in your routine. But typically, I would have lots of hyaluronic acid throughout my routine, a vitamin C serum in the morning, an alpha hydroxy acid tonic in the morning. And then right now, I'm using retinol at night, although I would go through phases with that.
Okay. And in terms of, you know, your own bathroom collection, so if you have a room full of product and this is ever increasing, what is the percentage of stuff that you take and you bring to your own collection and you use regularly?
So if I'm working on a column relating to that product category, upstairs it comes. So yeah. it stays in the beauty cupboard, which is a room. It stays in the beauty cupboard until it's time, until there is a column. So, for example, if you were a new, I don't know, let's say for argument's sake, if you were a new concealer and it was time for me to do a concealer column, upstairs you would come into my bedroom. And if you were skincare, upstairs you'd come into my bathroom. And then I would start kind of really knuckling down and paying attention to the product in a more practical way. So, yes, they live downstairs until I'm doing a column on that topic. Yeah. And come upstairs.
Were you always obsessed with beauty? I mean, now obviously it's your profession, but as a young person, can you remember, you know, your first product perhaps?
I was definitely always obsessed with beauty. I was brought up by my father, and I don't have any sisters, I only have brothers, and so I just craved the girly stuff. I was always obsessed. I always wanted makeup and skincare because it just felt like another world to me. In terms of my first product, I remember probably it would have been a Body Shop product. I think like a Body Shop Morello Cherry Lip Balm or Body Shop Cocoa Butter or something like that. And then my first posh product was from Clinique. My brother bought me a Clinique lipstick. And then I went through a real phase of, you know, saving up all my money for something from Clinique or Clarins. So I would have been about maybe 12 or 13 then. And my first posh perfume was my mother brought home a bottle of Miss Dior from, she went on a wine, you know, on a booze cruise to France. And she brought me home a little bottle of Miss Dior. And that was my first perfume. I would have been 11 then, I would think.
That's amazing. You smelled well as an 11-year-old then. So many of us, though, have fond memories of Clinique. I remember similarly, you know, having that teenage problematic skin, my mom bringing me to Brown Thomas and getting that three-step skincare. And I used it for years and years. You have a lovely relationship with Clinique. What is it about the brand that draws you to it time and again?
Well, here's the thing about Clinique that people don't necessarily understand. Clinique invented skincare. They invented modern skincare. You know, people just talk very casually now about, oh, I need to do my cleanse, my tone, my moisturize. Clinique invented that. They literally invented that. And so
I didn't realize that. That's where I learned of it, but I didn't realize they you know, were the groundbreakers on that.
100%. The modern way of looking after your skin, which is to cleanse, exfoliate, and moisturize, is something that Clinique invented. And what I think is very important about Clinique is, although they are the kind of, you know, in the forebearers, they are the inventors of modern skincare, they've remained focused on innovation, which means that, you know, they haven't put in place this routine and stuck to it forever with no modifications. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly, you know, I don't think Clinique would mind me saying that. I think they had a few years ago where they lost their way a bit, but I think in the past 5 years they've been extraordinary. You know, they've really focused on what I think Clinique is meant to be, which is transparent, active, proven, clinically tested, and affordable luxury skincare. And I think that's what that brand is about. It has to be a brand that women can trust. It has to be a brand that women understand and that women know is grounded in clinical trials and qualified dermatologists. And I think that's completely what it's returned to, and it's all the better for it. So product lines like Moisture Surge, for example. Moisture Surge is obviously one of the mainstays of the Clinique range, but for many, many years, Moisture Surge was the only range for dehydrated skin. Everybody else just talked about dryness. They didn't talk about dehydration. And so the fact that dehydration and hydration are such huge stories now in skincare, and Clinique has responded by expanding Moisture Surge as a range and introducing ever more expert products to that range, you know, is really important. They have tried to stay one step ahead. And I think in the past 5 years, they've been incredibly good at it.
And in your job, you get to try and review products before they're available to buy in stores. You've mentioned now what we're hearing a lot about is Clinique's new Smart Retinol. Have you had a go?
Yeah, so I think that was a missing product for Clinique because, as I say, I think people absolutely expect those skincare staples that are clinically proven, that we know work from Clinique. People expect that. And I think there was a little bit of a gap in the portfolio for a great retinol from Clinique. And so I'm really, really glad they've done that. And I think with the Clinique ID range as well, that was something they really needed to do, and they've done it in quite a unique way. And what they've done there is, I think they've introduced with ID, they've introduced lots of younger women to active skincare they can trust. Do you know, there's a real problem in skincare at the moment, in my opinion, which is, I think probably 99% of the women I meet who say they're having skincare problems are using far, far, far too much on their skin. Yeah. They are using far too many single ingredient products. I think brands are expecting them to become alchemists and chemists on their own. Whereas what Clinique does is what a skincare brand, in my view, should do, which is they formulate the products expertly for you. So you just have to put them on your skin. You are not required to become a little laboratory assistant. You are just required to be somebody who wants to help their skin in an expert way. And I think that's what Clinique are best at. And I'm glad that they're doing that with their retinol.
I think that that's very important that Clinique go down that route, and perhaps that more brands follow suit, because, you know, you do feel, as you say, like a chemist or an alchemist with acids, this, and, you know, it's very hard to keep up. So in your opinion, what are the top three that we should go to? You mentioned vitamin C and your hyaluronic acid. Is there anything else that we should go to rather than lose ourselves in the sheer volume of selection?
Everybody needs hydration. So the best way to get your hydration is from hyaluronic acid and glycerin. Both are completely harmless. You could bathe in them if you wanted 10 times a day and nothing bad would happen. So go for your life there. Everybody needs an antioxidant. I happen to like vitamin C as my antioxidant because I like the glow it gives me. So everybody needs some kind of antioxidant, and everybody needs some kind of sun protection. Those are the things you absolutely have to have. And then you can layer on top of those the things that you'd quite like, right, that have proven benefits. You may like to add in a retinol at nighttime. You may like to add in an alpha hydroxy acid for glow, a beta hydroxy acid to penetrate those pores and help clear out those pores. You can add in lots of things, but my advice would always be to try and add in as many ingredients in as few products. What I don't think is a good idea is people using 13, 14 different skincare products in a routine, which I see all the time. It's just not a good idea because even if you think that you're layering on 10, 12, 13, 14 active ingredients that are good for you, what you don't realize is there will probably be 35 other ingredients around it in the carrier. In the carrier cream, lotion, serum. And that is an awful lot to bombard your skin with. Try and keep the product count low and let the chemist do their job by working those actives in to a stable formula that is not going to irritate or agitate your skin.
Right. Okay. You mentioned words as well earlier on, like trust and transparency. Now, Sally, you're one of the most respected beauty writers and you're a voice that I trust, that people regularly trust and go to for advice. Do you have to be very protective of this, of your integrity in an industry that isn't always transparent with a lot of different brands?
I think all you can do, I actually don't find it that difficult, to be honest. I think, you know, my rule of thumb is if I don't love it, I don't do it. And if I ever make a decision that isn't based on that, then it will ultimately cost me. And it's quite easy to make the right decision if you think the wrong decision will ultimately cost you and a career you care passionately about. So if I don't love a product or I don't love a brand, then I won't work with them. And I certainly will never, ever, ever work with a brand and not declare it in the most kind of open and transparent way. It's never, ever, ever going to happen that I do things any differently, and nobody should be doing things any differently. And so I don't find that part difficult personally. I think you just have to think, do I love this really? And if I do, then great. And if I don't, then the answer has to be no. But in terms of the rest of the industry, look, you can only clean up your side of the street. You can only keep, you know, your front garden clean. And that's what I do. But I certainly know of lots of people in my industry who are fully transparent and fully honest. And handle themselves with integrity and decorum. There are lots of people who do. I think what I see when it comes to the kind of thing you're talking about, the sort of dishonesty about declaring and the kind of doing any old thing. Yes, I do see it sometimes in my industry, but I see it more from celebrities, to be honest. When I look on social media, and I think it tends to happen more outside of the beauty industry and more in the kind of wider celebrity culture from where I'm sitting. But as I say, I can't really speak for what other people choose to do. I can only live by my own rules, which are really, really strict. I mean, it happened to me this morning. You know, a brand got in touch this morning and asked if they could pay to go into one of my Instagram skincare roundups. Well, I would never do that because that's a skincare roundup. You can't pay to be included organically in a selection of brands. If a brand wants to work commercially on a dedicated, fully declared project, then great. But you can't sneak into something in that way. And I'm still quite surprised that people ask. A brand recently asked me to endorse a product and just say that I'd help them make it, you know, which I was absolutely stunned about. And of course, I said, absolutely not. I would never, ever, ever say I'd been involved in making a product I hadn't. But they're never brands that you have a relationship with, to be honest. They tend to be brands that come out of nowhere, that don't really know much about you and think it's a numbers game. They see how many followers you've got and think, well, we'll have a bit of that. But actually, the brands who know you know how you work. The brands who I work with regularly know exactly what I'm like and know how I'll respond to anything anything underhand. And they wouldn't dare. And actually, that's not how they work themselves. So I feel very lucky. I find on the whole that I like to work with fewer brands, but great brands. So the relationships I have are very, very long term. So Brown Thomas, Selfridges, I've worked with Brown Thomas and Selfridges for Lord knows how long, you know, almost a decade now. And that's the way I like it. I know everybody. I know I can trust everybody. I know that things will be done professionally. And so that kind of stuff Estee Lauder companies is another company I've worked with for a really, really long time. That kind of stuff matters to me. And so I'd rather stay in a tiny pool with really long-term relationships I can rely on than spread myself too thinly.
That's fantastic. And it's amazing that you say that, because I remember reading as well when one of your brilliant books was being launched, Pretty Iconic, that there were brands that tried to pay their way onto that list as well of the most iconic products. And I guess anybody that would know you or be familiar with your work would know that that wouldn't go down too well. So it's amazing they still try, isn't it?
It's amazing. I find it quite insulting that people would try. It does make me quite cross, but I'm certainly not backwards in coming forwards in telling them. I think that I would never, ever, ever, ever accept money for including a product in any of my journalism or book writing. Never, ever, ever in a million years. It will never happen. Never has, never will.
And you mentioned social media now, it drives products. It really does, you know, and some products perhaps get attention that they don't necessarily deserve. Then there are other products that, you know, don't look for the attention. I went shopping for, ironically, a hyaluronic acid yesterday, since we're talking about it so much. The one that I wanted wasn't available in Brown Thomas. It had sold out. And the lady led me to The Ordinary. And I paid such a tiny amount for a little bottle of hyaluronic acid. What do you think about brands now that are taking a very simple approach to marketing, to packaging? You know, is the quality the same?
I mean, that's a good question. I could go on all day about The Ordinary, because I think what The Ordinary has done, it is really, really terrific in many ways and a little bit concerning in other ways. Okay. So I would say that what they have done is incredible in terms of revolutionizing the industry. There is now a consumer expectation that skincare is transparent in its efficacy, that it uses ingredients that don't have, you know, big flowery fancy French names, that have ingredients that are proven to do the job. It has also democratized skincare in that you can no longer hide behind a fancy jar and say, this just works, trust us, it's £100. You now have to show your workings. And I think The Ordinary created that. And I think the influence they've had over the rest of skincare has been really necessary and really wonderful. I personally would recommend that you choose a formula with as many of the ingredients as you need in one formula, in one product. Because also, apart from anything, who has the time? Who has the time to layer on all these products? Choose a couple of products with as many of the ingredients you need at the right levels inside those one or two bottles.
Talk to me about the area of green beauty then, because we had Gucci Westman on the podcast recently, and I was very interested in her approach to green products and her blacklist for other products that will simply never appear in her formulations. What is your thoughts and your approach to that whole area of natural and green beauty?
I mean, it's a very broad church. There are many, many, many natural ingredients that are excellent for the skin and that are clinically proven in many cases to be effective on the skin. Squalane, for example. Squalane's a terrific ingredient that I use all the time that is naturally derived. Hyaluronic acid, although, you know, most of the hyaluronic acid we use is synthetic, hyaluronic acid is a substance that exists in your body. It's what keeps your eyeballs lubricated. It's what keeps your kneecaps lubricated. So I'm all for natural where it works and where it's safe. The problem I have with clean beauty is in tarring synthetics with this brush that suggests they're toxic or dangerous. We have, particularly in Ireland, because you're still in the EU, we have the most stringent safety regulations in the world for products and for ingredients. And I think we have to remember that the clean beauty fad, movement, cult, whatever you want to call it, has come from America, where the regulations are not as stringent as they are here and in Ireland. And I think as a result of that, people are quite confused about the ingredients in their products and the good and perceived harm they do. Products in the UK and in Ireland are exceptionally safe. There is nothing dangerous or toxic in them. And I feel very, very uncomfortable about the conversations around ingredients and the labeling of them as toxic. Non-toxic beauty goes through me because it suggests that there is toxic beauty and there is not. And so I want to reassure anybody who's listening, who's worried about, you know, all chemicals. For a start, everything in the world is a chemical, everything. Everything in every skincare product in the world is a chemical. If people are worried about synthetics, don't be, because the synthetics we use are proven to within the nth degree. And things like parabens are good ingredients. I will use parabens all day long. Parabens are not an issue at all. However, there are some ingredients that are taken out of clean beauty products. But I'm quite glad are gone, not because they're dangerous, but because I don't like them. So I don't like mineral oil, for example, because it makes some people break out. It's not dangerous, but it's a sort of cheap ingredient where nicer ones are available. It's part of the petrochemical industry, which, again, you can have environmental concerns with. So I'm perfectly happy to see that go. It's not dangerous, but I'm happy not to have it. Silicon, not at all dangerous, but I'm happy to see it go because I don't like the way it peels when I put my makeup over the top of it when it's in moisturizers. So, you know, there are some things that have been taken out of clean beauty that I'm delighted to see go for many reasons, but none of them relate to safety and perceived toxicity.
A housekeeping question now for you, Sally. In terms of the shelf life of our products, how long should we really keep skincare? And then I also want to know how long we should keep foundations. You know, for example, a friend of mine recently just invested in retinol and realizes she's pregnant. Will it last the shelf life? Can she use it the other side? Or what's the deal with that?
Totally depends on the product and the active ingredient and the packaging. So in your friend's case with her retinol, it really depends how that retinol is packaged. If it is in an airless, opaque pump, so if you can't see through the bottle and there's no air in the bottle, i.e. you don't remove a cap, you just pump from it, then she might be okay for 5 or 6 months. Since she's discovered she was pregnant, she might be fine. It depends if she's going to breastfeed, whether the wait is going to be even longer than that. In terms of foundation, you can smell. You can smell when it's had enough. You can smell when it's given up the ghost. And that is much more likely to happen if you take a screw lid off the top and you have an open necked bottle than if you have an airless pump. If you have an airless pump, I would imagine with most foundations, depending what's in them, they would probably last for about a year if they're in an airless pump. It depends it depends what the preservatives are in the product. So typically, a clean beauty product, as we talked about earlier, probably won't have parabens in it. Now, for me, that wouldn't be a good thing because parabens are the most stable and well-proven preservatives there are. So I would prefer something with parabens in so that it doesn't go off and irritate my skin. So there are lots of different things to consider. But by and large, if it goes, the only hard and fast rule I would say is if it goes near your eyes, i.e. if it's a liquid eyeliner or a mascara or something, I wouldn't use it longer than for 3 months once open. Obviously, if it's a pencil, an eye pencil, you're fine because you just keep sharpening it. But if it was something, you know, like a liquid eyeliner or a mascara, I personally wouldn't have it open for more than 3 months because then you're looking at potentially irritating your eyes.
And in terms of the beauty industry in general, it's full of really incredible people. We mentioned Gucci, Westman, and really innovative people. But it's also an industry where women especially thrive as brand CEOs, as scientists, founders, multimillionaires, billionaires at times. Is there, in your 10 years in this industry, a particular person or brand that has particularly inspired you?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, there are certainly women in this industry who inspire me a great deal. Sharmadine Reed is one. I think Sharmadine is incredible. Obviously, there are makeup. I think what Jamie Genevieve has done with Veve is really exciting, to have come from working behind the counter in a department store to being at the helm of her own brand that sort of sold out so quickly. I think that's an incredible achievement. For the most part, the people in this industry who inspire me are the people who are really good at their jobs, who remain nice. I think that's probably, you know, people like Sam and Nick Chapman, have remained lovely. Val Garland, who I'm sure people will know as the judge on Glow Up, Val Garland is still absolutely lovely, despite being, you know, one of the world's most in-demand makeup artists. She's still a really decent person who gives all the credit to her team and her assistants and so on. I admire people like that who've really made a huge success of their lives but didn't pull the ladder up behind them. And they're just nice still, I suppose. That's the thing. Those are the people I like.
Yeah. And you mentioned Jamie Genevieve, and she was on your in the Bathroom YouTube series, which is so enjoyable. You've interviewed so many people there. Is there a favorite episode you have and why?
Yes. So not to kind of downgrade any of the other videos I've done, because I really have loved them. There've been so many highlights. I loved Drew Barrymore's episode. I loved Claudia Winkleman's episode. I loved Charmadine Reed. There are some that are just so much fun that you never want them to end. But I suppose on a really, really personal level, my favorite was Morag Ross, I think. So Morag Ross is BAFTA winning, Oscar nominated film makeup artist who works with Martin Scorsese and Cate Blanchett. And because my real greatest passion in life is film, to do hers was just what you might call a nerdgasm. I just absolutely loved her episode because we talked in so much detail about film, and she's an incredible makeup artist and quite different from the makeup artists that I work with in fashion and beauty. Her technique is very different. And so I think if I had to pick one, I would say hers, because I forgot I was presenting it and I was just listening to her. I could have listened to her all day. She was wonderful.
Isn't that wonderful? You know, you mentioned there that you had this wonderful offer to say you created a product that you didn't create, a product that you didn't create. Has it never crossed your mind, or is it something that could happen for you to launch your own products or collection? It seems like it would be a perfect step.
Well, I've definitely had offers. For me, various things would need to be in place. I have quite a long shopping list of things it would need to be. I would need to be really, really proud to put my name on it. And I would need total control over what it was. And for me, I suppose everyone has their different priorities. But for me, I wouldn't want to do a super, super luxury thing. I would want to do a really accessible, democratic thing. I would want women of all incomes and all backgrounds and all ages to be able to get involved. So it's just a question of finding the right thing. But it's certainly not out of the question. And then I suppose I would also love to do something in fragrance as well.
Yeah. And in terms of the way the beauty industry is going, are there any big changes that you see? I mean, I know you really advocated for more diversity and, you know, for a bigger range of skin tones to be available. I think that a lot of brands have got on board with that. What's the next move that needs to happen?
Well, it's funny with inclusivity and diversity, because yes, these are conversations I've been having for literally 20 years. I'm always the stroppy one in the room in consultancy with brands and in meetings with brands who complains about this stuff. And it will be an ongoing battle. I feel that as a person who is allowed a seat at the table, then it's my job to act as a mouthpiece to people who are not yet at the table. And I think that's the future. It's all very well talking about 60 shades of foundation. Of course, foundation is important. Of course, inclusive color ranges are important. But what is more important than that, and more long term and more influential overall than that, is who is in the office, who's in the back room, who is designing the packaging, who is doing the marketing, who is actually behind the scenes at brands. If all of those people are white and posh, because diversity doesn't just mean color, although that is incredibly important, there's also an intersection with class, which is really important. If everybody is white and posh, then there's a limit to how inclusive your brand is ever going to be. It's not about foundation. It's about who is working on this brand and which voices are influencing the future of this brand. And until that's more inclusive, I think we're not even halfway there.
And I think that's very aligned with your charity Beauty Banks as well, and this movement to ensure that on a very basic level that we all have access, that everyone has access to toiletries and makeup. Tell me a little bit about that, and mainly how people can help and support that if they wish to do so.
So Beauty Banks is a charity co-founded and co-run by me and my friend Jo Jones, who's a bit of a legendary beauty PR. And we set up Beauty Banks when I was working on a project for the BBC about homelessness. And I discovered that staff in homeless shelters were taking in bits and pieces of essential toiletries to work, so that if a client, a homeless client, had her period, or if somebody needed to go to a housing meeting or needed to go to a social services meeting, that they would have, you know, a tampon, a razor, a shower gel. And these are the things that we take for granted. And so we set up Beauty Banks to leverage our influence in the beauty industry to obtain essential toiletries and redistribute them to people who desperately need them. That's what we did 2.5 years ago now, over that actually, almost coming up to 3 years. That's what we did then, and that's what we continue to do. In terms of how you can help us, you can find us online. Just Google Beauty Banks website and you will find us. And there's lots of information there on how you can help. And all I will say about Ireland is watch this space.
Oh, wow. We could be, okay, well, I'm going to surmise that we might be hopefully having something similar here, which is so important, really. It's you know, it's something that is underestimated in how it makes people feel and you know, the improvements it can make to people's lives to have access like you're creating. So I very much hope that the space is filled soon. Before I let you go, Sally, and I'm sure this is the question you're always asked, but if you had to pick your top 10 items, I'm being greedy now, what would they be?
Oh my goodness. So I'd need a red lipstick.
Yes.
I'd need a nice orangey red lipstick. I would need a really great foundation and a great tinted moisturizer. I'd need a vitamin C serum with hyaluronic acid. I'd need a great retinol. I'd need a silicone-free moisturizer that's a gorgeous base for makeup. I would need a really heavy duty body lotion because I'm as dry as you like and need basting like a turkey when I get out the shower. Perfume. I couldn't go anywhere without perfume. I left the house the other day without perfume, and which is so rare. And I sent my husband a text and said, oh my God, I've left the house without perfume. And I spent the whole time on the train thinking, all the counters are closed. There are no testers. How am I going to get perfume on me before I meet the people I'm meeting for lunch? And I was in an absolute panic because I felt like I was wandering into a restaurant without my clothes on. That's how perfume obsessed I am. So I would absolutely need perfume no matter what if I was on a desert island in order to feel happy.
And what's your scent at the moment?
So today I'm wearing Guerlain L'Eau de Nuit, which is a beautiful oriental fragrance. Absolutely love it. But I'm never monogamous to perfume. It depends what I'm wearing. It depends the mood I'm in. It depends what I need to do that day and who I feel like being. And it's a joy to choose a new one each morning.
Well, it's a joy to talk to you and to hear your advice in real time. And we stay tuned to your column every week. So thank you so much, Sally. And thanks for your time for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I love Ireland more than almost anywhere else in the world. And my Irish readers, and no word of a lie, my Irish readers are the most engaged, loyal, enthusiastic, interesting. That's why I love coming over to Ireland so much, because I'm always stopped in the street by the most brilliant women that I'm so proud to have as readers. So thank you for having me.
Well, I hope we see you back here very soon. Sally, thanks a million. Thank you for listening to the Brand Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share, and follow us on Official Brand Thomas on Instagram for more updates.